That time I met India Ari. That time I went on a really bad date. That time I was directed by Robert Townsend. That time I got mono on Thanksgiving. That time I went on a really bad Christmas tour. That time I.
Yes, folks, this is a That Time I episode, and these stories are always really fun for me to share with you all. And thank you to those of you that have been leaving me comments on social media. Just know that it brings so much joy and life to me. I hope that we are getting closer and closer to a time that I can tour the country and meet many of you. But until then, I thank you for your comments, and I thank you for your reviews. Someone's meemaw did a review on Apple Podcasts recently, and I was like, yes. So Doris, if you are listening, thank you for tuning in, being a part of her living room today. I'm talking about that time I met a celebrity, and I want to start with one of my favorite music artists of all time, hands down, India Ari. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you have heard me talk about India's music. I talk about her in other episodes with other people. I'm almost certain, if not, if I haven't already done it, that I need to give her a crown. I want to give her many crowns. And if you're not familiar with India Ari, part of me wants to tell you to press pause and go listen to her music right now. And then I feel like torn, like, well, listen to this and listen to her music. But either way, listen to her music, okay? I have loved India Ari's music since first hearing her. She is one of the few artists who I own all of her albums, not just streamed them, like owned them, either bought them on CD or bought them and downloaded them. When that first became a thing, that's how long I've been following her music. So this story that I'm telling you, we are entering the life of Amina when I was about 22 years old. This was my second job outside of college, which caused me to meet India at this point. My first job out of college, I worked for Smoothie King. And my second job out of college, which ironically, like the Smoothie King where I worked as my first job, and I want to shout out my friend Salita, who is the reason I got that job, because she was working there after we both graduated from Spelman. And she knew that I was just feeling very aimless at the moment because I had applied to grad school. You may have heard me tell this story on this podcast. I can't remember now. But I had applied to grad school because I really wanted to be a writer, but I just didn't know what to do with myself in the in-between time. And I didn't really see myself being a person that would do well in like a corporate setting. So I just thought grad school because I thought that would at least buy me some time. So my goal at the time when I was graduating from Spelman was to get a master's of fine arts in poetry. And I graduated college in 2002, so we were the class that was graduating the year of 9/11. And I want to talk about that a little bit because I think when we think about, you know, what it means to go into the job market and what the economy's like, and I like to bring up that reflection because I know that there are millennials listening that remember either leaving high school to go into the workplace or leaving college to go into the workplace and going into the workplace in a time where the economy was not in a very stable place. And I also want to voice that for people that are graduating right now during this time that we're in a pandemic. And both of these moments are similar to what it was like for those of us that were sort of coming out of college, going into the workforce right at this time that the economy was in a very unstable place. So I applied to grad school. I applied to 3 schools and did not get in to any of them. So my friend Salita took a good kind of pity on me and was like, hey, I got this job at this smoothie place. Why don't you come up here and work? So I worked at the smoothie place for a while. And then another friend of mine that I went to church with, she called me and she said, hey, I worked with this woman in the past who was an event producer. She's looking for an assistant, and I thought about you. She connected us. And the wild thing is, y'all, life is so crazy. The Smoothie King where I was working was literally up the street from this woman's house who became one of my favorite bosses that I've ever worked for. And I will tell you, I've worked a lot of careers in my life before I got to this one of doing my art and working, you know, sort of in media, arts, entertainment world full time. But next to this job, the job that I worked for my old boss, Pam, working as an assistant to her being an event producer, that was my second favorite job next to the job that I do now, talking to y'all and performing poetry, right? And I remember talking to Pam on the phone. We did kind of like an initial phone interview, and she worked out of her home. And so she invited me to come to her home where she could kind of do a little bit more thorough interview of me. And she had a very up north accent. And so I didn't really know what to expect. But when she opened the door, this beautiful Black woman, I was already sold on the job. But when she opened the door and I saw that she was this beautiful Black woman, I was like, oh, yes, this is everything I want in my life. So her office and her home was upstairs, and we did the interview, and I found out I got the job. Okay, so now part of what Pam's business did in event production is a lot of the events she did were for these big like nonprofits, and she would help them coordinate these big fundraiser events, these fundraiser galas, you know, that were very expensive per plate, and then would raise all this money towards these different nonprofits that she worked with. And one of these events booked India Ari to perform at the event. And I was super excited. I don't think I'd had that many other interactions with people who were like famous or celebrities or well known outside of one time in college. I co-facilitated actually with another Spelman student, Falathia Haygirl, who's now Dr. Falathia. But Falathia and I co-facilitated a conversation with Pearl Clegg and Sonia Sanchez. And I remember that was the first time that in my adult life I can remember being that close to someone who didn't know me at all, but like I knew them, I knew their work, I had so much respect for them. And I remember Sonia Sanchez and Pearl Clegg both being very down to earth and asking us these very ordinary everyday questions about school and how we were feeling about our classes. And I just, they were rock stars to me. I mean, writers are rock stars to me still. So this moment, imagine I'm only probably a couple of years later from having had that moment with Sonia Sanchez and Pearl Clegg. And now here I am. Oh my gosh, India Ari got booked for this event. Whew. Okay, I already am like in love with her music, but also have to be professional. So we get to the night of the gala. All the preparations are together. We're at this large venue in Atlanta. And it's my job as Pam's assistant to basically check on all of the talent, make sure everybody has, you know, what they need, and kind of running interference between whatever tasks need to be done and like checking back in with Pam, making sure Pam's good if there's anything she needs me to get for her as my boss, right? So she was like, go check on India, make sure she has everything she needs. If there's anything that she needs, get it. So I go down to where the green rooms were in this venue. And this is when I find out that India's writer told us that she is vegan, but no vegan food was provided for her because the catering was just your average catering. It was like pasta with cheese sauce. It was just all the only vegan thing that was there may have been a pan of string beans, and that might have had butter on it, to be honest. And I don't think I went down to India's dressing room myself. I don't think I went down there myself because we had some other volunteers working. And so I think one of the volunteers came back up to tell me, and I remember going outside of this venue with one of the members of the steering committee. And we had gotten a restaurant suggestion from India because she was like, I have to eat before I perform. And, you know, every performer is different, right? Like, I get so nervous before I perform that I can't eat. But I have some friends who are like India. They have to eat before they perform. So she had told us about this Indian restaurant that she loved that had wonderful vegan food. And bless our entire hearts, the steering committee member and I commandeered a limousine out front of this venue. Didn't belong to us, but they were all just sitting out there waiting for their different people, you know, to take them home after the event. So we begged this driver to drive us like several blocks away so that we could pick up this food, get it back, get India fed so she could perform. So we're like running in our heels. We get in this limousine. The driver agrees to take us. We get out. We order. We're just like picking as many dishes as we can because we want to make sure there's enough food, not only for India, but for her band members that are there, any other singers who were there with her, whoever she brought with her. This is food for all of them to get fed now since nothing is there that they can eat. Get the food, hustle back, run in our heels to make sure the food gets there. Then I have like a moment to breathe, right? And I'm like, whew. And at this time, I think I had met India and introduced myself to her, let her know that I was Pam's assistant, let her know if there's anything she needed. But I was being super professional, y'all. And it's kind of like there are two Aminas inside of me, honestly. There is an Amina that is very professional and very full of customer service, like all the time. And then there's the other Amina who just could faint at the sight of someone who just she finds very impressive, right? But in these professional moments, like customer service Amina, she gets the job done. I totally talked to India, had this very professional moment. She nodded. She was professional. Like it was all good. So the event goes on. India performs. She's wonderful as usual. And at the end of the event, Pam walks up to me with this Swarovski Crystal Award. And she hands it to me and she says, why don't you go and give this to India? And Pam didn't say to me, this is your time to tell her you're a big fan. But Pam knew I was a big fan. And there was some kind of knowing in her eyes when she handed it to me that I was like, what if I never see India again? What if this is my one moment? So I go to give India this award and tell her we just, you know, really thank her and appreciate her for agreeing to be part of the event. And she's so kind and so excited to get the award because of how it was made. And she told me that she loves crystals. And so she was very excited to get this like Swarovski Crystal Award. And so right as she was like gushing over the award, I was like, this is my time. And so I just told her, India, you know, thank you so much for being a part of this event. And also, I really love your music and I listen to it all the time. And also, like, one of my favorite songs is Strength, Courage, and Wisdom. And like, I listen to Strength, Courage, and Wisdom when I get on the treadmill and like, I'm on the treadmill. And so, y'all, as I'm describing to her that I listen to her music while I'm on the treadmill, I start doing this like running motion, like I'm trying to demonstrate to her with my body what I do on the treadmill. So I'm like, I get on the treadmill and I'm like, strength, courage, and wisdom. Like I'm all of this, I'm telling you, I did in front of India Ari, okay? She was very kind and very gracious. She chuckled, she said thank you. And I just like shuffled myself away before I did anything else. That is what happened the time that I met India Ari. And just thinking back on that, I'm like, oh my gosh, my little 22-year-old self and just not even knowing how to handle this whole situation. This felt like my first like real job. I mean, Smoothie King is a real job too, but this felt like my first real job in the sense of having had all these like responsibilities that I needed to do. And there were things that Pam was like handing to me. And it was like, you have to do this. And if you don't do this, it doesn't get done. And to think that I got a chance to meet India Ari in the process at 22 years old was pretty cool to me. So shout out to India Ari for being just a wonderful and kind person to me, even though I was very awkward with her. But shout out to Strength, Courage, and Wisdom because it is a really dope song. Okay, my next That Time I Met a Celebrity story is about Brené Brown. And I don't know if Brené Brown would consider herself a celebrity, but I'm just using celebrity as a term to mean like famous people, people whose names you know before you meet them. Like, you know them, you know their work, you know something about them. And I think at the time that I actually met Brené Brown in person, I think I had just started reading, maybe it was The Gifts of Imperfection that I was reading. And somebody had recommended it to me because I am a recovering perfectionist myself. And I just remember being on a very like healing journey at the time. And so I was reading the book and I was kind of tweeting some things about the book. And I do not remember exactly what I was tweeting, but I remember somebody, I was tweeting with someone about the book. And I said to them, I know, right? And like, basically, I was saying to them, basically, Brené Brown's like my cousin, probably, because I mean, if her name's Brené Brown and my name's Amina Brown, like, surely we're cousins. And Brené responded to my tweet, basically like agreeing that we were cousins. And that made me feel like, oh my gosh, now we're going to get to go to the same family reunion. This is going to be amazing. And let me tell you something. It is wild how social media, there's sort of like two meetings that happen, right? Because when someone famous or someone that you really, you know, respect their work or know of their work, know of them, and this moment where even them liking your tweet or even them responding to you on Twitter or on social media, that is its own meeting, right? Like, if the story had stopped there, I felt so amazing that she responded to me, right? So fast forward several months later, I was booked for a leadership event in Atlanta, and Brené Brown was also speaking there. I was performing poetry there, and she was speaking there. And we were all, well, I didn't know that she was. I was staying in the host hotel. And she was also staying in the host hotel. But of course, I didn't know that because to pull back the veil on what speaking events used to be like in the before times, it really depended on the speaker if they were even staying the night sometimes, depended on the speaker if they wanted to be in the host hotel. So you weren't always guaranteed that even if you were on the bill with, you know, insert these people that you think are amazing, it didn't mean you could like go down the hall and know they were in the same hotel that you were in. So my husband and I were getting ready to leave the hotel. And when the elevator door opened up, came to our floor and opened up, there was Brené like standing in the elevator. And you know how like your mind is doing this like spy move a little bit where your mind is like looking at a face and scrolling through like why that face feels familiar to you, even though you don't know that person personally. And my brain did the like, and was like, oh my gosh, that's Brené Brown. And y'all, when I tell you Brené was chilling that day, like no makeup, she had on like kind of like an athleisure kind of set on with like the jacket with the zipper and the pants to match. She had her sneakers on. She was holding a Chick-fil-A cup, the largest one. And I respected the fact that it was the largest one. For some reason, I was like, that's right, girl. You drink all that sweet tea or whatever it is that's in there. And I reacted before I had a chance to think. So as soon as my mind recognized this is Brené Brown, I said, oh my gosh, you're my cousin. So then I'm looking at Brené's face as her face, maybe her face and her mind is also doing the spy like, and certainly is like, when I go to my Brown family reunion, I don't remember anyone looking like you there. I don't know. Like until her face was like, who is this woman? And why does she think that we're cousins? So then I tried to cut in before it got super weird, before it got additionally super weird. Anyways, And I was like, remember on Twitter? And I explained to her the whole like Twitter chain of events. And then she was like, oh, yes, no, I do remember that. Yes, yes. Hi, how are you? And we did like a little exchange and we chit chat. And I was like, yes, I am also performing poetry at this event where you're going to be speaking. So I hope I see you there and like have a great day. And let me tell y'all something else about when I run into celebrities out in the wild, meaning when I run into them and it's not their event or their concert or their show, or they're not sort of in their like professional moment, you know, and I just looked at her and she looked good, you know, but I looked at her and just knew she was not in her like professional gear. She was chilling. And I felt like it would be wrong in that moment to have asked her for a photo, because I just felt like she's relaxed, she's chilling. I don't want to bother her. She's in her like regular life zone right now. So I didn't ask for her picture, y'all. I just like enjoyed the moment for myself. And honestly, I think I was hoping that at the event where we were both booked, I was hoping that I would see her the next day or later that day, like in the green room or something. And then she would be in her like garb she was going to wear on stage. And we'd both have our makeup on and we'd take a picture together. But to pull back the veil on how events used to be in the before times, you also didn't know if everyone who was booked for an event would actually be in the same green room at some of these events. It's kind of interesting to think about that now, because I'm like, maybe that was particular to this event that I'm not going to name. But anyways, it was basically like there was a general green room where most people hung out, but there were certain more high profile speakers that had their own green rooms. And that's understandable because, you know, because of people like me that were probably going to, you know, be bothering those people while they're trying to prep for their talk or whatever. So Brené was totally on the premises. I watched her talk and it was fantastic, but I saw her nowhere in the green room. So the only picture I have from this moment, y'all, I'm going to have to post this on my social media so y'all can see it. The only picture I have of this moment is me next to the TV screen where Brené was speaking. So shout out to Brené Brown for being very kind to a stranger, basically yelling at her in an elevator that we're cousins. And I still feel like we're cousins some kind of way, Brené. So I know that, you know, it might be a while before there's a big family reunion, but, you know, I'm still feeling like there's some biscuits or something that can be shared among the family, Brené. Let's work it out. So my last celebrity story is about that time I met Common. So I know that if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, that it may feel like I have lived a lot of lives in one life. And haven't we all, though? But I feel like I have in a certain way, because I just have had certain things I was doing at a certain time in life that gave me access to certain types of events. And then once I stopped doing whatever that thing was, then you just move on. You don't have access to that, right? So before I became a poet professionally, I was still a poet, but I wasn't doing poetry as my vocation. I actually thought that I was going to try and make a career of being an arts journalist. I had started trying my hand when I was around probably 25. I started trying my hand at writing about music. And a part of this, I will say, to be very honest, was a hustle to get free concert tickets. A friend of mine named Larry, he had a newsletter that, I mean, it was probably really not just like, I feel like now when we say newsletter, we mean like e-newsletter, we mean different things. But he had something that it was like on a mailing list, but it was actually more like a small media outlet inside of his newsletter, right? And so he would ask different ones of us if we wanted to write for different sections of it. And if I remember right, I think it was called ATL Lowdown at the time. And ATL Lowdown had been looking for some writers interested in writing about music. And Larry was basically like, yeah, just like make this your own, look for shows you can cover and albums you can review. And so I just started writing to different promoters and concerts and saying, hey, you know, I'm writing for ATL Lowdown and wanted to know if I could have one free ticket or two free tickets to such and such show. And resoundingly, most of those people answered yes. They were like, we'll add you to the media list. Here's where you can go. You know, maybe if the artist was sort of doing like group interviews where you could kind of get a question in, or sometimes the artist would allow different media outlets to come into their green room before they perform. Like, it was wild. I interviewed all sorts of people like this. So Common was coming to town as a part of John Legend's tour, y'all. So I want you to imagine that John Legend was headlining. This was when John Legend's album Get Lifted had come out. John Legend was headlining. Common was performing before him. And then before Common, Rozell was performing. And Rozell is a phenomenal beatbox artist. So I felt like, I think I tried actually to get to John Legend and Common, like reached out to their publicist. And got to their publicist, and she did write back to let me know she received my email. But then after that, I stopped hearing, which kind of made me feel like, oh, the outlet I'm writing for might not be big enough. And I can't remember by this time if I was doing this for ATL Lowdown, but over time, after I started writing for ATL Lowdown, that I really started to think I wanted to take journalism seriously, especially because I was having a lot of fun trying to find words to describe the musical experience. And my favorite thing was to write about what the live show of an artist was like and sort of give people who may not have been there this window into what it was like, and to try to describe for people who were there, you know, what the experience was. And so after I realized I loved that, then I started reading up on how to pitch different article ideas. And before I knew it, I was a freelance journalist writing about arts and culture in Atlanta, and really trying to focus as much as I could on what then would have been like soul and hip hop, right? And so Common definitely like fit into that vibe. So I don't remember if it was for ATL Lowdown or another publication, but a part of it was if you wanted to pitch a publication, you would sometimes have to do a little bit of the legwork first. So I couldn't necessarily go to them and say, hey, I want to do an interview of Common. I would have to go through the process to see if I could get Common to say okay to the interview. And then if he said okay, then I might be able to go back to the publication and say, well, I've got this interview with Common scheduled, and maybe they'd be interested to take on this idea. I also, at the time, ran my own blog. So sometimes I would write to publications, and if they didn't take the idea or the pitch that I had, then I would still like approach the publicist, the promoter, whoever, and see if I could land the interview. And worst case scenario would be that I put it on my blog, right? So I'm really wanting to land this interview with Common because it just feels like so important. And he was one of the bigger name artists at that time that I had ever approached for an interview. Anyway, I try all I can, but it's very apparent that my little publication that I'm trying to get this interview in is not important for an artist like Common. So I think I need to stop here and give even a little more context to what my thoughts were as I go into the concert, because I think I went ahead and bought, I'm trying to remember if I bought the tickets to the show or if I got free tickets to the show but didn't land the interview. And I can't remember that part. But I want to rewind a little bit to tell you another thought. So before this, there was one time, this never happened again, but there was one year in Atlanta where Vibe magazine, which was founded by Quincy Jones, had a Vibe music fest in Atlanta. And I think I also covered Vibe music fest. And I remember that is part of how I got introduced to John Legend, actually. Because at that time, Common and John Legend were under Kanye West's label. And this is, y'all, I'm trying to think about the timing. I think this is before Kanye's like debut album even dropped. Like the singles were out, but I don't think the album had come out yet. This was my second time seeing Kanye live. And Kanye, John Legend, and Common performed their set together. And I need to just admit to y'all something. You know, I try, like I'm sure a lot of us try, not to be a judgy person, you know, but when it comes to like groupie culture and those things, I do think I judged. And I was just like, I just could never see myself like being a groupie that's like trying to chase down these, you know, men who are artists and find their hotel rooms. I don't know. I don't see myself being that person. And I'm not going to lie to y'all that something about seeing the three of them performing was the first time that I contemplated becoming a groupie. And I don't know if it was like the power of what that music sounded like at the time that it just riveted me at Vibe Music Fest. But I remember feeling like I understand how people become groupies now. Like it makes complete sense to me. Even if I don't become one, I can understand. Okay, so keep that in mind. So here I am, probably maybe a year later now that John Legend's album is out. I mean, I watched John Legend perform twice with Kanye West before any of us really knew who he was at all. Like, it's so crazy to think of that now, right? So here I am at this concert, and Razelle performed, Common performed. And I'm talking about Common put on a show. Do you understand? Common rapped, he freestyled, he was breakdancing. I mean, it was like outside of DJing and graffiti, he was doing all the facets of hip hop, what it felt like. He put on such a good show that I was like, oh my gosh, like he just gave John Legend a run for his money right now. Like, John Legend has to come out and really like bang out this show. That's how good of a show Common put on. So the concert was at Atlanta's venue called the Tabernacle. And if any of you live in cities where there is a House of Blues, the Tabernacle in Atlanta is probably the closest we get to what would be like the House of Blues in Atlanta. So in between each set, the artists, I don't know if John Legend did this, but I think Razelle and Common both at the end of their performances, they went out to their merch table, to their merch area. And if you wanted to buy merch or have them sign things or just greet them or whatever, like you could do that while you were waiting for John Legend to come on stage. So I decided I really didn't have anything that I wanted to buy. I'm not even sure, y'all, honestly, that I had money to buy anything, okay? Because the reason why I was trying to get all these tickets for free or for very low cost was because I was also broke at the time. So being an arts journalist was part me discovering this thing I was very passionate about, but also part a wonderful hustle because I didn't have money to go see a lot of these shows. So being able to promise to blog about it or write about it for a publication and that being my way to get into this concert or this music festival for free was working out wonderfully for my social life. I had even figured out with one of my girlfriends, Camille, who is a photographer, she and I would sometimes write in and get two tickets so that I would get one as the writer and she would get one as the photographer. And she would take enough pictures to get me a shot to give to the publication. And I would write the article and she and I would have like a fun night and we would just go watch whoever show it was. So I get in line because I don't know. I think what I had in my head was that I wanted to introduce myself to Common, tell him that I had tried to get this interview, and I don't know what I thought was going to happen from there. I'm wondering if maybe in my mind, I'm hoping if I say this to him, that he'll be like, oh, like I can, like if you can do like a quick interview, I can do it right now. I was just prepared for whatever he might say. But I really was getting in line for a professional moment because I wanted this interview, whether I was going to get it after the show or whether I was just introducing myself so that the next time he was in town, my name might be more familiar to his publicist. I don't know. All I'm telling y'all is I had forgotten all my like groupie thoughts that I'd had at the previous show. And I was like, I'm going to go up here so I can try my best to like land this interview. So I get to the front. Common is wearing a yellow like polo kind of shirt. And he had a Kangol to match. And y'all, I got up to the front of the line and I looked in his eyes and it was like everything professional that I could have had in my mind, like left me in that moment. And I think there's a commercial that's like what I'm about to describe to you were the feelings that I had inside myself. And I think this is actually a commercial tactic that's been used a few times where like two people, they meet and they look in each other's eyes and then they sort of, you know how like, it's almost like instead of you seeing your life flash before you, like what your life was in the past, they are seeing their future together, like flash before them. And so I looked so deep into Common's eyes, y'all, that I just got like transfixed on these freckles that he has on his face. Like he has like a dotting of freckles across his face. And I was not seeing a past together. And I can't all the way tell y'all that it was like a future together. The only thing I can think to tell y'all is that I looked in his eyes and realized like, this is the type of man that would turn you all the way out. That is the exact thought that came to my mind. And I realized when I looked in his eyes and that's what I saw. Like even though for a lot of us that grew up listening to hip hop, especially grew up listening to hip hop in the 90s, you have this perception of rappers who were considered to be conscious, right? So Common would have fallen in that category, like Mos Def would have fallen in that category. Like these were rappers that, you know, called women queen in their rhymes and different things. You know, they weren't gangster rappers. They weren't really rapping about gangster life or drugs. They were rapping about the community. They were rapping about Black history and Black present, Black future. They were like rapping about those things. So Common was like in the category of rappers that did that. And so that, I feel like because of that, especially around this time, there were a lot of assumptions about what's a conscious rapper like, you know, like Common's vibes were very different from LL Cool J. You know, like LL Cool J had a very, you know, outwardly sexy vibe that was a part of his music. Well, at that time, Common didn't really have a lot of that going on in his music. But y'all, when I looked in his eyes, like I felt those vibes. And I also, it was like I felt two feelings. One, I felt like this is the kind of man that would like really turn you out. But also, I felt that you are not prepared for that turning out. Like you're not prepared for that. So all of this happened very quickly in my mind. And it took my breath away how good looking he was when I got that close to him. And the only thing that finally came out of my mouth to say is I did finally, professional Amina, I got to give it to her. I got to give her the kudos right here because like other Amina has fainted, has started thinking thoughts about wishing that she had a pair of breakaway panties. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? Like when I played basketball and volleyball in high school for my little Christian school, because that's the only place I ever played sports because it was very easy to get to state when you went to Christian school. Anyway, we used to have breakaway pants that you wore to the game. And then when it was time to play, you could basically pull those pants off from the waist because they were all snaps. And then you were wearing your like basketball shorts that you were actually going to play in. And I enjoyed those breakaway pants. But other Amina was thinking, that she wished she had a pair of breakaway panties. And if she would have had a pair of breakaway panties, she would have just pulled at the waist and, I don't know, like, thought about handing these panties to Common. I don't know where my mind was headed there. But I'm telling you where other Amina was, why she couldn't think of nothing else to say. She had a lot of other thoughts going through her head. Professional Amina stood up there and was like, "Hey, Common, you know, I really wanted to get this interview with you, reached out to your publicist, and, you know, never heard anything back." And Common, like, took a pause for a minute. And then he looked at me in my eyes, y'all, and he said, "It's okay. We'll see each other again, won't we?" And I don't know if you've ever experienced the feeling of your body feeling like it is going to spontaneously combust from the inside out. That is exactly what I was feeling at the end of this conversation. Is this a thing that Common probably says to everyone who's in line at his merch table? Probably. Did I care about that at the time? No. He might as well have been asking me to marry him as far as 25-year-old Amina was concerned. So that, listeners, is about that time I met Common and almost got turned out, but then didn't because I realized I was just not ready for that kind of thing. I want to thank y'all for listening to the embarrassing things that I've said, thought, and done when meeting celebrities. Bless my heart. And I'm interested to hear your stories. I hope you slide in my DMs and tell me some of the shenanigans you've experienced in meeting celebrities. And this is not even all of my celebrity stories. So I might come back and do another episode of That Time I Met a Celebrity, Volume 2. For this week's Give Her a Crown, I want to shout out Chloe Zhao, who recently was the first Asian woman and second woman ever to win a Golden Globe for Best Director. In her book, Year of Yes, Shonda Rhimes talks about the experience of being first, ever, and only. And I simultaneously wish for a world where talented directors like Chloe Zhao no longer have to be the first Asian woman to receive these types of accolades. And I want to give Chloe Zhao the honor that her work deserves for what it means to be an Asian woman and a woman of color, paving the way for so many marginalized voices that will come behind her. I recently watched Chloe's film, Nomadland, starring Frances McDormand, as a woman who loses everything in the Great Recession and embarks on a journey through the American West as a van-dwelling nomad. I gravitate to films that explore the themes of home, and I loved the cinematography and the storytelling and the characters in this film so much. Check this out, as well as Chloe's other feature films, Songs My Brother Taught Me and The Writer. Chloe, thank you for telling stories that reconnect us to the land, that reconnect us to each other, for the path you are paving for other Asian women and other women of color. Chloe Zhao, give her a crown.
That time I met India Ari. That time I went on a really bad date. That time I was directed by Robert Townsend. That time I got mono on Thanksgiving. That time I went on a really bad Christmas tour.
Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.